Smalled and sad.
Self-help from the hip.
Smalled and sad.
We're talking that shit.
Smalled and sad.
And keeping it real.
Smalled and sad.
With me and then Seals.
It's so funky. Oh, God, Laja, Paul West Indian Massive! This episode is
Side Effects of Being West Indian.
If you care about your listening, put the hand in the air. Get something on wave. I'm not going to be at that level the whole episode, but I want to be. Big up all of my Caribbean peoples. This is our episode. It's all about us. And we are about to get into it. We have our guest, publicist to Beyonce, Jussie Smollett, Chloe and Halle, and Grenadian! Miss Yvette Noel Shore, Spice Island, Grenada to the wall! It's going down. But first, I don't even want to do a gem drop in for this one. I just want to go straight into the DMTs because y'all had so many questions. So I want to big up all of my West Indian folks because y'all really showed up in my DMTs.
All the flags.
You know we could wave a flag, we. So it's going to happen. We're going to have an extended DMT. You hear the level that I'm at right now. I'm at a high level. I'm literally existing in like the existential expression of soca right now. I'm at 168 BPMs. Let we go.
DMT. We're serving it.
Don't ride it, jump. Ride it, jump. Mama, ride it, jump. I'm jumping. I say ride it.
First off, I want to say this. You know, I think that there's a misconception for folks on, like, what makes folks West Indian or Carib. Because when you look at all the flags, you think, oh, like, it's just those that are living in the Caribbean islands, which are, of course, the set of islands that stretches from beneath Florida all the way down to South America. So, you know, we have Jamaica, you have all the way down to Trinidad. Then, of course, you have Grenada, which is north of Trinidad, to the west of Barbados, to the east of Venezuela, and to the south of St. Vincent, and all the way up. And I think a lot of us really just think of Caribbean islands as like Jamaica, Trinidad, Grenada, Barbados, Bahamas, and call it a day. And that's simply not the case. The reality is that the CARICOM, which is the organization of islands that consider themselves to be Caribbean, are not just islands. You have Guyana in there, and Guyana is on the continent of South America. You also have Panama in there. And Panama, I'm not sure if Panama is in the CARICOM officially, but they be in the parade. They be in that parade on Labor Day on Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn. And Panama is in Central America. And the reason why there's such a strong West Indian presence there is because a lot of Jamaicans and people from the islands went to Panama to help build the Panama Canal. And so there is a huge West Indian presence there. And Panamanians have an accent that sounds just like this, you know? So there is an actual presence that doesn't mean that they're not West Indian just because they're in Central America. There is an actual Carib extension there. So the same way that there's like such a Southern presence in Chicago from the exodus of folks after slavery that went up north. So we have to expand our consciousness of that, especially, you know, my Jamaicans, I know y'all like to be acting like you're the only island in the Caribbean. You're not. Okay? And for anyone who's listening that is not West Indian, please understand that there is a bevy of different cultural specificities on each island. You know, we're all not just a monolith, and there's different cuisines. Listen, Jamaican cuisine is not the same as Grenada or Guyanese or Trinidadian cuisine, all right? Like, there's very specific things, like roti in Jamaica, not the same as roti in Trinidad. You know, there's also, like, different styles of speaking. The actual dialects are so different from island to island. If you've never heard of Major Hype, go on Instagram and check out Major Hype. He is an incredible comedian who oftentimes does videos where he just does the nuances of each different island's dialect and how they would respond to certain things. And it is fucking genius. And if I could get him on this show, we would do a grenade. We would do a Side Effects of Being a West Indian part two. And also, just a side note, Allen's Bakery in Brooklyn is my favorite bakery of all time. My godmother used to bring me hado bread from Allen's Bakery as a Christmas gift, okay? That's how serious it was. And they continue to bring me hado bread when I'm in New York and show love. So if you are out in New York and you're in Brooklyn, go ahead and visit Allen's Bakery, we. Let's get into these questions. DMT. It should be like DM Ovaltine or DM Milo. What are the differences in those of us who were brought up in the Caribbean and those who were raised outside of the Caribbean by West Indian parents? Does this differ by island? Side note, I'm Trini, but I'm claiming honorary Grenadian status. I lived there for a year when I was 9. Okay, my nutmegs is strength. Well, I think, I mean, for obvious reasons, there's a big difference just in the fact that, like, growing up outside of America creates a different worldly experience than growing up in America. I think that that's something that actually is true. You know, there's the idea of when you are an immigrant, you are born with, you know, the idea of, like, I need a passport to go somewhere. And in America, a lot of times, like, the idea of traveling is, like, considered a luxury. Whereas if you're on an island, travel is necessary for a lot of folks. I mean, especially if you're trying to advance beyond the island, you may come back. But for what it's worth, you know, if you want to advance your schooling or, you know, your level of involvement in global commerce, et cetera, you're often forced to leave that island. Now, I think there's also just in terms of culture, there's a different culture that happens on a West Indian or a Caribbean island and a Caribbean community that happens differently than in America. And those things travel with your parents when they come to America, but it's still a different implementation of that. I always say, like, yes, I was born in America and, you know, I definitely had a Black American experience, but I was raised in a Grenadian household, you know, and my mother definitely carried forth certain things from West Indian culture, good and bad, that are not a part of American culture. You know, like there's a certain level of prudishness that happens. Even though you're winding up your waist in the parkway, in the house, ain't nobody talking about sex. Whoa. No, I got books on a couch when I was 12. And that was it. I had to figure the rest of it out. So, you know, there's that. But then on the other side, you have just like the exposure to a lot of more global conversations, you know, like from the age of 3, my mother was sitting there next to me with a student's companion and asking me, you know, and quizzing me on different, like, the different rivers across the world and the different country capitals and the highest mountain peaks and deserts, et cetera, et cetera. And that came from her growing up in a school system that focused on a global understanding versus one that was very marginalized, which in America is. You know, America's education system is so hubris driven that it's basically like America's the best and everything else is like whatever. Whereas when you were growing up outside of that, you have a different exposure. You know, my mom, I think because of her teaching, because of her learning at Anglican High School in Grenada, you know, she had a thirst for or a love for like British English literature and Shakespeare, et cetera, that I feel like a lot of my friends and peers here in America like didn't necessarily get exposed to by their parents because their parents weren't exposed to that per se in their like regular learning. So I think there's a difference in that. And I think the bottom line difference is that like there's just there's similarities in terms of just how Black people the world over and in the diaspora operate, you know, and the way that we have had to manage oppression and the way that we have had to manage, you know, revolution and the way that we have had to carry ourselves, especially us women, you know, West Indian culture treats women a certain way that is distinct and different than per se in America. I would say that Black American women are a lot less tolerable of things that are considered to be like the norm in West Indian culture. Like, you know, West Indians love to act like infidelity is just some regular shit that's supposed to go down. And Black American women are like, fuck that. And I would love to see more West Indian women be like, fuck that, as opposed to accepting it as like, well, this is just a part of what our men do, you know? And I know there's some people that are listening like, nah, there's Black American women that don't be like, fuck that. Of course, there's women everywhere. But I don't think as a part of Black American culture, we consider infidelity to be some shit that should just be excused by any means. And I think in West Indian culture, it absolutely is such. So there's a lot of different things. I mean, I could spend a whole episode on just this one question. But when it boils down to it, the difference is that when you're born in the Caribbean, you know, you are absolutely like of that. And when you are born in America, it's not to say that you are not West Indian, but you definitely have a different dichotomy of experiences that you're dealing with. And I think one of the biggest differences with that is that racism is experienced very differently in America than it is in the Caribbean. And learning to understand how that plays out is also its own thing. And Yvette is actually going to speak to us more about that later in the show. But boils down to it, if you're West Indian, you're West Indian. okay? And I know that there's people who will be like, oh, well, my parents are from Grenada, but I'm not from Grenada, et cetera. Or people will be like, well, your mom is from Grenada, but you're not from Grenada. Fuck that. I dare you to tell me I'm not from Grenada while I sit under this big-ass Grenadian flag with my Grenada passport. You are your heritage, you are your ethnicity, and you are your identity, and you pursue that, and you learn that, and you are a part of that. And as someone who was raised in a West Indian and Grenadian household and who's been going to Grenada forever, like since before I was 1 year old, it is a huge part of what has shaped me and how I operate. It's even my screensaver. Next question. Next question. How do you deal with the generational effects of abuse and breaking the curse? I know physical abuse is one of the top means of discipline in the Caribbean, and I see a lot of West Indian people struggling with the effects of it in adulthood. Whew, even Lando had to chime in on that one. I mean, this actually, you know, it's a continuance of the previous question in terms of like different ways of being brought up. And, you know, how does it differ being born in the Caribbean and being born in America? And I think corporal punishment in America, though it is, you know, people spank, and that's not something that's necessarily like far-fetched for being in the home. In the Caribbean, it was a part of school. You know, like my mom was beaten so bad in school that my grandmother had to take her out of that school and take her to another school. And it was looked at like she was lesser than by going to this other school. But my grandmother was like, I'm not sending my daughter to go get mashed up by this man up in this friggin' school. You know, I'm not signing up for that. You know, and I'm really glad that my grandmother did that, because I think that, you know, when you live in an island, it's such a small community that putting on airs is oftentimes like a huge part of the existence there, and can be definitely, you know, Lando wants to be a part of the show. It's fine. And it can definitely be a hindrance in, you know, development and in making better decisions. And I think that the abuse that goes on between, especially like domestic violence, you know, all of these things that take place in smaller communities that end up getting pushed under the rug because those communities have such a connection that they don't want to like look bad, or you don't want to speak on bad on somebody, et cetera. I think that that absolutely does come up later, and dealing with those after effects. West Indians don't go to therapy. Like, anyone who's listening right now just shook their head like, it's true. You know, like, the Black American culture of therapy, like of being against therapy, that's not just a Black American thing. Like, West Indians ain't trying to go to no therapist and talk about problems. They're like, nah, man, I ain't putting that business out in the street like that. And it's like, well, it's not like the street. It's literally like a closed room. And it's actually against the law for her to release the information. But there's so much hurt that happens that ends up kind of just being infused into the community versus like being dealt with. And so what happens, I feel like a lot of times, is that because you have people who are forced to deal with so little, and they're so able to like find innovation in that, you know, when you're on an island, you got what you got. So you are become very resourceful and very innovative. And so you learn to work through and muscle through. But it doesn't change the fact that you've went through some fuck shit. And so a lot of times that comes out in different ways. And one of the biggest ways it comes out is in dealing with your children. So there's that. Yeah. And so I think for a lot of us who are the children of, especially like first generation West Indians, we are tasked with having to understand what our parents have gone through and the different cultural expectations that they had to uphold in order to manage dealing with abuse, et cetera. And we have to, we're basically like ending up having to do a lot of legwork in managing that, and in managing how that plays out against us, and then managing not carrying it forward in our own lives. And that is really taxing and exhausting. And I know me and my friends, there's a number of us, we have, and I have friends who have African parents that are like, oh, it's the same over here. But it's a lot of, you know, dealing with the fact that, like, you know, our parents a lot of times are just not, because of this and because of the way the cultural setup is in the West Indies, you know, our parents may not be as, like, emotionally expressive. You know, they may not be as warm. I feel like my mom has, over time, just become more of that by nature of the child that she has, because I ain't having it. And two, by just being kind of immersed in different spaces. Like, my mom does yoga now. Like, I got a text yesterday that said, I'm learning how to meditate. I'm like, who are you? I ain't mad at it, but who are you? You know? So I think it's also a beautiful time in West Indies. It's a beautiful time in the world when we are getting a lot more information breakdown, you know, because, and I don't mean breakdown in a bad way. I mean like access, you know, like I saw Grenada change when the internet came. And not in a bad way, but more so in a way that people saw like, oh shit, like there's even more opportunity that I can get and more opportunity I can have out there. I would say the only thing that was like necessarily like a bad thing that stood out was everybody started dressing like Tyler, the Creator. Next question. I'm not West Indian, but my closest friends in Brooklyn that I grew up with are all West Indian. So my question is, why is it that all couches and chairs are always covered in see-through plastic like they just purchased it from a showroom? LOL. Wait, am I even allowed to ask a question since I'm not West Indian? Well, yes, you can ask a question. The reason why is because, and I don't know if this is true, but I feel like part of it is because West Indians like to preserve everything. Like when you, like I said, when you live on an island, shit ain't coming around all the time. So when you get something nice, you hold on to that shit. You rock with it. And even when you move to Brooklyn, those habits don't change. Also, if you're on an island and you're like closer to the ocean, you got ocean and sea breeze coming through all the goddamn time. You also have like hurricanes you're dealing with and weather, and shit can get ruined. So there's always like a certain concept of like, we need to protect it, protect it, protect it. And so when you move to the States or you move to London, like that doesn't change. There's still this idea of like, this is a nice thing that we're going to keep and preserve. And everybody knows that those couches that are covered in plastic are not to be sat on. Don't sit on that couch. West Indians will have an entire room in their house that is not meant to be sat on. It is like a Smithsonian it's basically like the Smithsonian construction of this is what we think nice is. And every West Indian can tell you that. I don't know how I managed to grow up in a house that didn't have that. But there absolutely was couches that are not to be sat on, chairs that are not to be touched, and pillows that you better not put your head on. Don't you dare rest your head on that pillow as if it's a soft surface for comfort. That is only for looks and decoration. And I've had it for 35 years. And you're not going to come and ruin it, no. Get something on with. Get something on with. Get something on with. Get something on with. Say royo. Royo. Next question. Why West Indian parents love to comment on when you gained weight? You look a little light in it. You look a little tight in the waist, eh? Damn. So, true story. When I went to college, I got on the pill because I was having sex at some point. And when I came home, my mother knew I was on the pill. And she very, very, very quickly noticed that the pill had also caused me to gain quite a bit of weight. And she made it her business to make me aware of that at every turn. Now, there are Americans listening that are like, what? Your mother was fat shaming you. That is terrible. And any West Indian listening is like, for us, it's not considered fat shaming as much as it's just like parenting. Like that's how, and I'm not saying it's okay, but I'm just saying like, that's the context that we grew up with it in. Like this is a West Indian's mother's idea of parenting and a way to prevent you from becoming obese and dealing with it. And like, I will absolutely say like West Indian parents, and I know it's a blanket statement, whatever, the compartmentalization of feelings is absolutely not done well at all. It's like, whether it's worry, concern, love, doting, it all pretty much just comes out as yelling. So that's that. My mom, I will never forget, I came home and I was sitting in front of her on the bed and we were watching TV and I just heard from behind me, "You see the size of your arms?" Thank you. Then I was watching TV again while I'm home and she's like, "You don't think you should go for a run or something?" Y'all, I've never run in my fucking life, okay? I unless I was doing gymnastics, I was never like, let me go for a jog. I was never going jogging. And then I went to the kitchen and I went into the freezer and I was pulling out a tub of Ben and Jerry's. And when I closed the freezer door, my mother appeared like Bishop in Juice when Q closed the locker door. And she was like, "Don't you think you've had enough of that?" So, you know, it's just good old-fashioned, you know, being aware of my weight. I'm not going to say I lost the weight because my mother shamed me, but I will say it was part of it. And I think that her shaming was more so just concern of like, you're not yourself. You're going outside of like your natural self right now, and that's not okay. And I do think in my case, like, had I been a young woman that was on the more heavier side, I don't think my mother would have shamed that. It's just that I was clearly not looking like my regular self. And her way of dealing with that was not to say, "Mans, I think we should address your weight." It was to make me feel bad about it. And that is actually very authentically West Indian. As my friend comedian Reg Thomas says, if you go into a West Indian restaurant and they don't treat you like you're trying to borrow the food, it's not authentic. Next question. Why, as a West Indian female, you are expected to be a domestic house gal? Well, you know that. That has been the way. You know, and I think that as we see the world changing, West Indian men are going to have to really start understanding that change too. Women are independent. You know, we're not just independent behind a stove. We're independent in our thinking and in our aspirations and in not just wanting to have kids. And I think that there's, you know, we come from a village mentality that says like it's still tribal. So I think that there's growth and change that's happening. But I absolutely remember seeing, like, you know, when my uncles would come around, my mom would become the hostess. And it's like, I'd never see her like that. My mom has always been me and my mom, and she's making shit happen. She's a registered nurse. She's, you know, handling shit. When they come around, it's like, you want some of this? You want some of that? All this doting, doting, doting. Well, I don't want to be dotish. Okay? And I think that it's not just up to women to change that tune. It's up to men as well. And it's up to brothers that are West Indian to understand and to help push the needle on that, because we do need to encourage a more vocal community of women. And we do need to encourage a more aware community of men who understand that the times have changed and they were never right to begin with. You know, the objectivity of women in West Indian culture and the limitations based on women in West Indian culture, that's not just akin to West Indian culture. That's been patriarchy all over the world. And it was never okay. It was just, and when people try to say it's tradition, I'm like, fuck that. It's habit. And bad habits need to be stopped and changed. And if I don't know what the source is and why it has value for us, then that doesn't make a tradition. It just makes it a bad situation. Next question. Woo woo. So your mom has been supportive of your career and artistic freedom. I've been holding back because I've always been told the entertainment business wasn't lucrative and that I have to choose something more realistic, which I've done. What would you say is the best way to get my West Indian mother and grandmother to open up and be more supportive? I've been moving forward in baby steps, but there's nothing like the support of your mom. I mean, if we're being perfectly honest, the concern is simply that they just don't think that you're going to be able to support yourself. I don't think it's really about like, oh, I think that the entertainment industry has bad, has lack of integrity, or, you know, that the entertainment industry is going to get you into trouble. I think that's a part of it. But I think for the most part, West Indian parents just feel like the entertainment industry isn't giving anything of value to the world and that it's not going to get you anything of value in your bank. That's a fact. So I think there's two ways to approach this. I know for me, like, my mom has always understood that the art that I was creating was valuable because it not only served me and my artistic purpose, but that also was like a committed to like social change and, you know, upliftment, etc. And don't get me wrong, there were many times in my life where my mom was just like, I just feel like you don't like money because you're not making it. And it was like, no, I just don't want to, you know, sign myself up for lessening my dignity and my artistic integrity just for a check. And I think that was always like the thing that she couldn't like co-sign, like she couldn't like get that to make sense. But eventually she had to get it to make sense because I wasn't switching up on that. I think the other part of it is just like, yo, like, it is difficult to make money in the entertainment industry. You know, it is not like as straight ahead as being a physician or being a teacher or being a lawyer, where it's like you go to school, you get this job, now you have access and you have status, et cetera. There is absolutely a more wild, wild west to the entertainment industry, and West Indians are not about that. Like, they ain't trying to have no type of lack of control and uncertainty. It's like, no, I want to know that everything is going to be solid. I think that comes from a place of love. And I think that you have to express to them not only your willingness to tackle the uncertainty, but also you need to provide for them some type of solid ground to stand on to feel like you're not just throwing caution to the wind and being irresponsible. And I think that's what a lot of times it gets looked at. Like, oh, you just want to play around. And the arts and entertainment are not playing around. They're a craft. And the way that you demonstrate that to them is on you. But I know for me, it was going to school for it and auditioning and taking measures that showed my dedication to this craft, not just as something I want to do to be famous. So you got to give it, you got to give it gravitas. And then they may not be down with it then either. So you got to be willing to know that there just may be some shit that they ain't fucking with. And that's there's that as well. Next question. Do you ever look at American-born and bred people and think their drive is low? Our parents came here for us to be better, while born and bred Americans can't even be bothered to pay attention in class while it was drilled in us to be better and do better. Not my words, just reading the question. Not my words. Did the West Indian culture make you miss certain American cultures, i.e. I didn't know Christmas carols, just reggae Christmas music? Okay, that's two different questions. Her second question about, oh, did the West Indian culture make me miss American culture, things from American culture? In my case, no. My mother had a lot of American friends, so I got a good mix of things. But I think that there's like certain things that are West Indian that like my American friends would never know about. Like they wouldn't know about parang, which is, you know, specifically Christmas-based soca and calypso music that gets played during Christmas time. And, you know, you have carolers in America. Well, you have people that come and play parang in Grenada and, you know, in different Caribbean islands that they come around and they sing the Christmas calypso songs to the people just the same way that we walk around in America and sing Silent Night. Now, West Indians have a whole different flavor. Silent Night in Grenada is more like Silent Night, Holy Night, all is calm, all is calm. I say all is bright, bright, bright. I say all is bright, bright, bright. You know, it's something like that. But to her first question, do I think that being West Indian has made me look at Americans as if their drive is low? I think it's a very, 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 like, that's a tough concept, because you will definitely see West Indians who say that and who have had, like, issues with Americans and they look down on Americans, etc. But the experience of being West Indian and being American is very, very different. And if you were born and bred in this country, you are dealing with a whole other set of issues than if you were born and bred in the Caribbean. I feel very fortunate as someone who is of a West Indian parent to be able to call somewhere home that isn't somewhere that I'm still having to live amongst my oppressor. You know, like that mind fuck of being American and having to have that juxtaposition on a daily basis is very taxing. Black Americans are riddled with PTSD simply by existing in a place where you are having to live on the same soil and with your oppressor on a daily basis. In Grenada, when you go to Grenada, I mean, yeah, there was colonialism, but you see it in the way that things are named and the fact that we have all French names, and you go to Paris and you go to France and you see places with the same names. But at the end of the day, when you look around, you see black people. You see people of the island that have taken it back and that are running it themselves. And so it's not the same situation. I say that to say, also, when you are an immigrant coming to another place, there is just the simple fact that you were able to pick up your life as you know it and leave and go somewhere else. Your drive is absolutely going to be different simply by the fact that it has to be to survive. You're living on survival. When you live in America, the survival is in a different context. So I don't think it's fair to say that like the drive is less. I think the drive is different. I think the motives can be different. And I think the priorities can be different simply because the starting point, the source point is different. It just is. I think when you have West Indian parents and you are a second generation, you're getting double sides of the coin. My mom has absolutely been exposed to Black American culture solely through my teachings and my learning, and has had a wealth of, you know, changed opinions and open-mindedness happen simply because of that, you know, and there are stigmas that we place on each other. And I always just feel like as we are in the diaspora, you know, Americans get the bad rap as the black people in the diaspora because of the fact that, like, you know, we are presented so shittily on a global scale, and we are oftentimes are not even the ones who are in control of the media that's representing us. You know, so when you go to other places, I remember being in Haiti and this young woman, when she would speak in her American accent, she would talk like this. Like, she would talk like this. And I was like, where did you get that from? Like, you're like a bougie Haitian. And she was like, oh, because I watch Love & Hip Hop. You know, that's how they talk. That's how they talk. And I was like, she was like, you know, that's how I want to talk like a black girl. And then I had like an Airbnb girl who had stayed with me. She was from Paris. And she was like, I want to talk like a black girl. You know, like this. And I was like, oh, man. And it's not to say that there aren't black girls that talk like that. But that was just her only concept of what a black girl was. Because that was the only only representation that she had seen in an abundance of. So I think that, no, I haven't looked at Americans and said like, oh, their drive is low. I just think that the trajectory is different. And I think that we're coming from different places and different experiences. And we're driving from different driveways. You know, but West Indians are known for having 10 jobs for a reason, because when you came to this country, you weren't just coming for you. Our parents, you know, as a second generation, like our parents didn't come here for just them. They came here for to build a better future for us. And in many cases, to get green cards for 7 other people, you know, and to allow for there to be growth and opportunity that is an extension of their legacy. And you know, in Grenada and then on the islands, like owning land is such a huge part of our life and like a huge part of what goes on those islands. And in America, though reparations was supposed to be 40 acres and a mule, that idea of owning land, I just feel has not been instilled within Black American culture in the same way that and legacy building in the same way that it has been in the West Indies. And so I think that those are things that I would love to see cross over, you know, but for what it's worth, these DMT questions have been so fulfilling because they're so varied. They come from so many different sources, and they've really covered the vast experience of what it is to be West Indian and to grow up in a place that you call home with someone who doesn't call it home. And for those who were born in the West Indies and moved here, you know, just juxtaposing that culture that is so rich in another culture that is rich and continuing it while also adding to it. And I always feel like, you know, that's the beautiful thing about a place like America is that we are able to do that with all sorts of cultures. And I'm glad we're able to do that with the West Indian culture. And for those of you who are listening to this episode and don't know about West Indian culture and don't know about Carib culture, look it up. Don't just watch Cool Runnings, because them niggas wasn't even Jamaican.
People I like, yeah.
Wonderful about music when it is you feel no pain.
So today on People I Like, we have somebody who I didn't even know knew who I was.
What?
And my mom was like, you know, Beyonce publicist have a nutmeg on she stationery. It's a big, big, big nutmeg, you know. And I was like, really? And she sent me, I forgot why it had been published, but the nutmeg was so big. And she was like, I think she Grenadian, you know, because it's only we that's put it in nutmeg. So I was like, do some research. And Annette Seals is the queen researcher. And she came back, she's a Grenadian! We have Miss Yvette Noel Shore. How are you doing?
How are you doing? I'm so happy to be here.
So happy to have you. And, you know, I think that, you know.
I should have said, how you do, girl?
Adi. You know, this episode, Side Effects of Being West Indian, you know, we were talking before we were taping, and we were talking about how, like, we live in L.A., and it's not as culturally like big here, but if you work in the business, I feel like there's a lot of West Indians in
Lots.
The entertainment business, and you are somebody who reps some very large names.
Oh my goodness.
You rep the largest name.
I kind of do.
You kind of do. She's wow. the largest name.
She's the largest name.
Yeah. And so you rep Beyonce, my girls Chloe and Hallie.
Yes,
we're
I
like
love
the
them.
Best.
Love
Jesse.
Jesse, yeah, I do.
And
before that, I had, for years and years and years, I ripped John Legend.
Oh, John! Well, you know, John, careful with the mic. Keep it close.
Bring it closer.
John Legend came into Sirius Satellite Radio when he first dropped his album, and no one would interview him. And I was like...
I remember those days.
I was like, well, I mean, I like the song. I'll interview him.
Oh, I love that.
And so I interviewed him, and we were friends since, and he would, like, leave tickets for my mom at every show in Orlando. And, you know, I always tell people, like, I can send a DM to John. He will reply within 2 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Which means none of you niggas is busy. You're not busy.
I always tell people that.
You're not.
I have texted John, and he has been on tour, like, in Asia.
Yes.
And hit me back.
He's literally on stage singing Ordinary People, texting you back. And you're
I
just
think
like,
so. I do. Is. I was like, John, aren't you on stage?
You know who else is that? Yeah. Questlove. Yeah, he's literally been texting me with one hand while he was drumming with the other hand.
These are good people.
And I'm like, what? How? I mean, so.
Because they make time for people.
For people.
Yeah.
Yes, they make time for people. So yep. How did you... Did you always want to be a publicist? Was that always the
goal? Hell no.
Okay. Because I don't feel like anybody
no,
ever really
absolutely
wants to be a publicist.
Not. And you know, I admire young people who are trying to be publicists, but I actually thought that publicists were really evil people. Yeah, because in my job as a journalist and not for a Rolling Stone, I was the editor of Blackbeat magazine, a little fanzine back in the day that primarily spoke about artists that were doing R&B and hip hop, mm-hmm. but we were probably considered Z-list.
Right.
So every single time I got invited to something and I went, I found the publicist to be acting a little crazy, like they were at capacity. They were always at capacity by the time
always.
I showed up. And just, but they didn't know how to handle it. They didn't say sometimes they got just played rude. Are you sure you got an invitation? Things like that. And I was like, ooh, publicists are terrible. There were some really great ones, but there were some ones that just sort of crumbled under pressure, and especially for events. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. So when I got an opportunity to be a publicist, only because I complained about not having a Mariah Carey album, and I called Columbia Records, and they said, oh my God, something just went off. You're so passionate. Oh my God, do you want to come in for an interview? Because we've been trying to get a new publicist, but we've only been interviewing publicists. We didn't think about interviewing a journalist. I was like, if you send me the record and I'm able to make my deadline and write my review, then I'll come talk to you. And I went up and spoke to them, and they pretty much hired me right there on the spot. And I was still thinking they're trying to set me up because I got a job in like 2 seconds into an interview, and my first client was going to be Mariah Carey, who was married to Tommy Mottola, the head of the company at the time. I'm like, they're trying to set me up. They're trying to set me up. This is, you know, like,
because you just like
Caribbean people are just suspicious anyhow. Why
yes.
you being so
oh
nice
my
to me?
Gosh.
Why are you taking me out from making $30,000 and giving me twice the amount that I'm supposed
what
to be
you
making?
Really want, eh?
What you want from me?
My mother is the queen conspiracy theorist.
Oh my God.
I have to be like, stop. Maybe the person is just a jerk.
After
like,
17 years at Columbia, I still think they were trying to set me up. And I had a 17-year career.
I know what you're really trying
like,
to
what
do.
What are you trying to do? My husband's like, you've been there 17 years now. Nobody's trying to do anything to you. Yeah.
So you got there, and then it just like dovetailed from there?
It just built. I like to tell people that I think I was prepared for what was going to happen, but really I wasn't, because when you have to deal with Mariah, think like... Music Box, you know, that's when I came into that, the 1993 Music Box.
I'm singing it in my head.
That's what I came into, and it was like, oh my God, it just, I'm either going to die there, I'm like on the 24th floor, I'm probably going to jump out of the window.
No,
it was just really the pressure, because we're talking about a music business back in the day where you were selling 220,000 records a week, right? So it was a lot of pressure. But just when I thought I was going to fall apart, these four girls came in from Houston, Texas, Destiny's Child. And I was like, oh my gosh, I could do this. I could do this. I came from Blackbeat magazine. I know about young girls. I know about teenagers. I could do this. Did not know what was about to happen with that. That changed my whole life. Took me around the world. And then this kid from Springfield, Ohio showed up, you know, and then... I was told that he said he wants to speak to the person that's doing Beyoncé's publicity. That was John Legend. So it just kept going. I just kept getting really, really good artists. Mm-hmm. And it didn't become easier. I think I just had better training.
Yeah.
Each artist kind of trains you, you know. But like in 2010, I just felt like the walls were closing in on me. And I said, I had been there 17 years, and I was just like, I have to go. I have to go. I didn't know why I needed to go. I just felt like Sony Music and Columbia Records gave me the most amazing career. And then for like the last 5 years, every day I came to work, I felt like I was being pushed. Mm-hmm. Like that's not where I needed to be. It turned out though that when
I
left.
Can I ask how old you were at that time?
I came into the job at 31. I came into the job at 31. So I was probably 40. Ooh, how old was I when I left Columbia?
For the record,
I was almost 48.
You see her face?
Because I'm 56. And I'm so proud of my age. Black, yeah, I'm wearing my tight t-shirt from Bob Marley and my jeans.
Black don't crack. Crack.
And if you grew up eating callaloo, you definitely don't crack. Yeah, but I was in my 40s. I was close to my...
Are you exfoliating with nutmeg? I mean, I don't know.
You have to. Okay, well, don't tell TSA and immigration, but I bring back a whole bottle of Gran and San every time.
Really?
Yeah, man. Take all the crack off your heels and your face. Yes. Rub some eggs in there.
Grenadines is our number one beach in Grenada.
In the world.
In the world. I mean, Grenadines is 7 miles of just impeccable white sand beach.
Beautiful.
Just so we're clear, there are 40 beaches in Grenada, and Grenadines is just one of them.
Yes.
But who's counting?
Who's counting?
And just a side note, we have every kind of beach. So
we have black sand beach.
We have white sand beach.
That's right. We have rocky beach.
Rocky beach, yes. Coral beach, that's all kind
right.
of beach.
That's right.
So here's my question. When you were feeling the pushed out, what made you know where to go next?
I didn't. And as it turned out, when I left when I left Sony in March of 2010, mm-hmm. My father would die in December of 2010. Eventually, I started believing that it was the universe telling me that you have a little bit of time with your dad, spend time. Okay. And I just stayed home. I did nothing. I 2010 was like an off year for Beyonce. She was she wouldn't put out music again until 2011. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, we have a little bit of time. So from March to September, I was home, just sort of having fun, going on vacations. I went to Grenada twice. Nice. I went to Vegas in August. Worst thing, nobody should do that. It was really hot. Had the greatest time, all the time thinking I was just relaxing. But Beyonce called and said, you're still going to be my publicist? And I said, okay, yeah, Because you have to understand that my position with her was based
with
on my
the
position
label.
With Sony. But the fact that she said,
yes,
hello, I said, oh my gosh, great, yeah. My husband says, that means you can have a business. I said, no, that's just mean I can sit in my house and do publicity for her. He said, no, you can have a business. So without even asking me, he just started filing papers for us to have a business.
Is your husband West Indian?
My husband is so not West Indian, only by association. I call my husband the whitest man in America.
That's a very West Indian thing to do.
He is the whitest man in America.
Oh, that's also a very white man thing to do.
It's a very white man thing to do.
Let's file these papers. Let's get this legal. Let's get this legit.
No, he... Literally, I came back from one of my many vacations I took that summer, and he handed me some papers, and he said, you should look at it. And I looked at it, and it said Shore Media. Now it's Shore
Articles
Media
Group. Articles of Incorporation.
And I said, oh, my God.
Nice. Get you a man that's going to incorporate your business for you and then give it to you.
He did. All I had to do was call Billboard and say, I have a legitimate business.
We're going to need to do a loan.
We're going to need to do something.
So in this story, right, there's a lot of self-motivation. There's a lot of, you being resourceful. How would you say that your West Indian background has shaped how you've approached your career?
100% how it shaped my career. I give credit to everything that I learned in Grenada. Let me tell you a little bit that at like 8 years old, my grandfather put me on a bus, gave me a brown paper bag.
Where in Grenada?
Birch Grove, St. Andrews, right on the Grand Anse Lake. I went out of Granitan Lake and said, go to Mr. Bola. They were the Indian merchants. You know, they were Indians. They were Lebanese. But these were the Indian merchants that were in Grenada that sort of supplied goods to all the little stores. Go back. When I was growing up, I thought I was living in a really big supermarket. It turns out that I really was raised in a mom hostel.
Yes.
But he gave me such... He just thought I was such a smart kid.
Huh.
He just, you
gave
know,
you the autonomy he to get, go.
Yeah, he did. And like he said, you need to learn how to drive and all of those kinds of things. It wasn't just about my brothers. He really believed in women. I always
just
say,
a side note, driving in Grenada for women is a big thing.
Big thing.
My aunt is the second woman to ever have a driver's license in Grenada.
I'm the first in my family. to ever have a driver's license. There so that was go. Big.
They
that
had
was
to
really
lie
big.
About my aunt's age. Our producers look at me crazy. My aunt was literally the second woman in the island of Grenada to have a driver's license. Yeah. And just to this day, by the way, driving in Grenada is a whole experience.
A whole experience.
And you, I mean, like,
it's such a mountainous, windy road. Like, you have to have a good heart.
And they're trying.
You
and
do.
They're trying to fit two cars on a road that is not made for two cars. And there's like,
cannot
you know,
do
you're
it.
So high above sea level. There's a 60-foot drop yep. on one side.
Yep.
But then,
press
you
a
know,
piece.
A press a piece. Stay left, stay. And you drive on the left side of the road. Yeah. So stay left, stay left, stay left. And then, you know, you might end up in a ditch. But if you just wait a couple minutes, somebody will pull up.
Somebody will pull
we
up.
We were in a ditch and three guys pull up in a car, got out, didn't talk to us. Walked around the car. Go so. And then next thing you know, 1, 2, 3, pull. Lift the car up, got back in their car, peace.
Exactly.
Not even conversation. No. It's just like
this. It's what they do.
It's what needs to
it's
be done.
It's what they do.
It needs to be done.
Yeah. But you know, you learn in Grenada those things. You learn to be good to people. You learn how to work hard. You learn to work with what you have. My grandmother, my grandpa used to say, you know, make the most of what you have. And that's what you do. That's what you do. And for me, it meant also changing the rules of what I thought publicists do to make it work for me. Like, I wanted to always work from a place of kindness. Like, understanding, like, a writer is on deadline, being respectful of that, being kind, and being knowledgeable. You know, you can't go pitching if you don't really know what you're pitching. You know,
speak that truth.
So, you know, you have to learn what the artist is about. You have to learn what the music is about, what they represent, and not just be, you know, these days I just see everybody
just
with
a
cell phone. They just have a cell phone. I'm just working this project right now. Like, no, like, hello. Like,
and as an artist, I'm just like, you know, it's you feel so great when your publicist understands, like you said, like what you're about.
Exactly.
Because the projects are essentially extensions of what you're about. You know, like my publicist understands that, like, my bottom lines are I'm smart, I'm funny, and I'm black.
Exactly.
You know? And
don't forget the essence of the person.
That's the key.
Yeah.
You know, so
the music, the acting, all of that is just a little part of who you are.
Of the core.
Exactly.
That one time.
So speaking of who you are, we're going to get into our next segment, That One Time, so we can get a little story.
Yeah.
A little story about being a West Indian. And that's my pause. So you were born in Grenada.
Born and raised until I was 14.
Until you were 14.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us about what the transition was like when you moved here at 14? And where did you move to?
Well, little 14-year-old virgin girl got on the plane. And the reason I said that the whole virgin thing is that when I was a little girl in Grenada, there were a lot of young girls who were pregnant.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I came to America in 75. Uh-huh. And what I remember, there were a lot of young girls who not only did they get pregnant, their life sort of ended because they had to be thrown out of school and that kind of stuff. And I just remember saying to myself, don't shame mama. Don't shame papa. Don't, you know. So I just stayed away from boys, period. Mm-hmm. Just stayed away from boys. And when I came here, a couple of things happened to me that are really distinct. My dad and my mom were already in America. And they decided that no one could leave Grenada before your 14th birthday. Because they felt that 14 was like the age that everything was in you.
That
you now
a
had
Canadian
a true Grenadian
mitzvah.
Upbringing. You can't get on the plane before you're 14, you know?
Okay.
And so when I came, I think, first of all, it was December 10th, 1975, Pan Am to JFK.
Pan Am. Y'all don't even know about Pan Am.
Little flower
all
dress.
All they know about is a TV show that had one season starring Christina Ricci.
No, Pan Am was it. A little flower dress. A little,
this is every West Indian story.
Not
my
even
mother,
a sweater. Not even a sweater on the plane.
My mother went to London on the plane in a sundress and landed in London in winter in a sundress to go to nursing school.
Unbelievable. That is my story too. I was with my brother, Trevor. Trevor. How could
of
you
course.
Not have a Trevor,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Always.
And we went through Trinidad and then took the flight to the U.S. And I remember Daddy coming to the airport to pick me up, and he brought an even thinner coat than I'd ever imagined. And we're standing outside of JFK Terminal and waiting for this taxi. And I was like, Daddy, you don't have a car?
Did you have a green card?
Green card.
He came with a green card.
Came with a green card. Moved to Brooklyn. It snowed the next day. My brother and I were going out to the fire escape, 836 Utica Avenue in Brooklyn, apartment 2C.
Ooh, Utica!
Yes! Between Church and Linden.
Oh, my God! Yes!
Yes, yes.
There was Y'all don't understand. That is like, you don't even need to. There's no
Insane.
Americans. It's
no.
just,
no.
you're in
no.
the island.
Insane.
It's like a whole archipelago
but you
in
know,
a block
yes.
radius.
But you know what? I wore those white strappy shoes for like 2 weeks, thinking that it was okay to do that. Because when I woke up, my dad was at work, my mom was at work, so nobody was telling me that there were boots under the
yes.
under the bed for me.
So in the
from
winter,
Shoppers World for
$5.99.
In the winter, I had my toes out, and it's funny. My kids, I for a long time, I still wore my toes out in the winter, and I remember my daughter Mika saying, "Mommy, like cut it out. get some boots. Just really get some boots, okay?
Yeah." So you came to New York. Did you feel like, well, since you were in such a West Indian community, do you feel like it was an easy transition?
When I stayed in my radius in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. it was. When I went into Manhattan, it was a whole other culture that was very difficult for me. Like I took a job against my father's wishes at Burger King. That's actually where I met my husband. He walked in and asked for a chicken sandwich and my name on a Wednesday. We had a date on a Friday and I moved in on Sunday. Very bad girl. We'll get to that. But when I got to...
You're fresh.
When I got to the West Village, when I got to like seeing different people that didn't speak like I did, that was really hard. And certain times in Brooklyn, it was hard for me because American black kids back then didn't like Caribbean people. So I was chased down hallways and called Coconut Girl and Banana Boat Girl for a very, very long time. And I remember one time going to school and being teased so badly that I left. I left in the middle of the lunch period and I went home and Daddy was home.
Ooh.
And he said, "March your ass right back on that bus number 46 and go back to the school."
B46.
And that was a lesson. That was a lesson for me to just not, to get up. Get up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't born in Grenada, but I've always been, you know, my mom had me going to Grenada before I could walk and speak. And I was always very attached to my Grenadian heritage and, you know, I have citizenship and,
that's great.
You know, like it's very infused in me. And it's interesting when you were saying about like when you would leave your microcosm to go out, you would see like all this different kind of stuff. And you're like, oh, because for me, it was like that, like it's Grenada in my house. But then once I leave my house, it's a whole other
rest of the world.
Experience. Yeah. And like a lot of people don't understand when you're growing up West Indian, like, even if you're in America, if your parents are really about West Indian culture, like that is what's happening in your house. And
every corner of the house, yeah.
You miss out on other stuff. So like I didn't know there was a Negro National Anthem until I was 15.
I think I was probably 21 when I realized that.
Like,
and
I never knew that.
Oh my goodness.
You know, my mom.
You know, I still feel a little deficient in that, honestly. I still feel as proud as I am.
But that's why I have a master's
Caribbean.
In African-American studies.
Yeah, I saw that. I read that.
Because
I felt like I was lacking in that.
Yeah.
You know, when I read my first James Baldwin book, mm-hmm. I was like, there's a whole other life. There's a whole other life there, you know?
I mean, my mom, as a West Indian, she's learned through my, like, study of Black American culture and my experience of Black American culture. And she has said the same thing that it's kind of, like, helped bolster. Because when you're growing up in the West Indies, it's still, you're dealing with the leftovers of colonialism. You know, you're still dealing, like, my mom always talks about, you know, they make us come and stand up in this hot sun to wave at this queen drive by. I mean, why the hell are we waving at these people?
Yes.
And then, you know, when they she sees them doing it with Prince Harry again, she's like, they're still doing
they're
this
still
crap!
Doing this.
Yes,
yes.
But I would bring certain like West Indian cultural things into class. And I have, I mean, one particular memory where I did a report about Grenada, and I had, you know, the poster board and everything, and I'm talking about different fruits and, you know, the Mona monkey, et cetera, and I talked about breadfruit, and my teacher was like, oh, that's, it's no, there's no such thing as breadfruit. It's fruitcake. And I was like, well, no, it's not. No,
it's breadfruit.
It's breadfruit. And she's like, Amanda, it is fruitcake. And I'm just like, as a kid, you're like, this white woman in Orlando, Florida, don't know shit about Grenada. And she literally like made me sit down and was like, you know, that is incorrect. And I went home and told my mom, and my mom was livid, of course.
I could imagine.
And made me come back. She had a bunch of postcards with breadfruit on it. And it's not like you could find breadfruit in the States.
Right.
But
now you can in Brooklyn.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Because she wrote a whole thing for me to read.
Yeah.
And gave a note to the teacher explaining what breadfruit is. But I feel lucky
because it's the most important thing in Grenada. It's part of our national dish.
It's literally a part of our national dish. Yeah. Oil dung. And I hear people who are like second generation West Indians, and they'll be like, well, I'm not Grenadian, my mother is Grenadian. And I always feel like sad for them, kind of, because it's nice to have a place that you're still connected to, that you could go home to. I don't know, you know, with other islands, Jamaica and Trinidad are probably the other two besides Grenada, where in the house, everywhere you turn, there is something that says Jamaica or Trinidad or Grenada. We are right now sitting on a couch beneath a giant Grenadian flag.
With the nutmeg.
With the nutmeg. And when we see each other, like, I had known about you, but then it wasn't until we met in person.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, God. Oh, my God.
Job, job, people.
Y'all, we down here playing mass. Up in the essence, black women in Hollywood. Yeah. And then you see other Grenadians come up. Estelle.
It was so good. And Rondell, who works for Essence, was there too.
And then Sid Noel, who is one of the Dora Milaje in Wakanda.
Exactly.
Who else was one of our Grenadian constituency? We have a large Grenada constituency.
It's growing too. People are kind of coming out.
Lewis Hamilton is from Grenada.
When I met him, I lost it.
Really?
Like years ago in England. I was like, oh my God.
And we rep.
Yeah.
I did see a video of Craig David recently being like, oh, I don't really know much about Grenada.
He gets me upset.
And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Find out.
Yeah.
Find out.
It's really, you know. And Malcolm X's mother is from Grenada.
Yes.
For those who don't know.
That's right.
So, you know, but I feel like as West Indians and, you know, second generation West Indians, we do have just a different experience with America.
We do.
And we're going to do a part two of this with my mom, who's going to talk about the green card process.
Oh, my goodness. I want to just tell you one thing. When I was growing up in Grenada, I never heard the words, the N-word, and I never heard the N-word that's actually Negro.
Right.
I've never heard that. Right. So the first 3 days that I was in Brooklyn, I was walking to my other uncle's house, my younger uncle's house, and a young kid called me a nigger. Like a little kid.
Yeah.
Like a little kid. So, of course, I didn't put it together yet. Like, I didn't really understand what the kid was saying.
But it felt like an insult?
It felt like an insult.
Okay.
It just felt like an insult. But then I sort of kept walking to my uncle's house. And when I went to, I said, a little kid just kind of ran out and said, nigger, to me. And he said, oh, that's not a good thing. Like, and my uncle was all about, you know, black power. You know, it was 1975.
Yeah,
he had his afro and everything. And he put me in sit down and I said, wow, not everybody's going to like me in this country.
Right.
It's going to be a little different. And I'm the most sensitive person you can run into. And I was just like, you can't cry every time.
Are you a Cancer?
No, I'm Scorpio. I'm such a weak Scorpio. But I just said, you know what? You just can't let that stop you. And I've been in situations where I was treated so badly, so badly. And anytime when my kids were young, I was just like, you can't be a punk in front of your kids. You can't be a punk in front of your kids. Mm. You have to stand up. You have to deal with prejudice. You have to say it. You have to let people know you're not going to take it.
Verbalize
you know, like Grenadians, they give you their money They take it out of their bra, the handkerchief that's in the bra, they pull it out in front of you, and they want to place it in your hand. So that is how I grew up in the shop with people putting the money.
Yes.
And so I get so insulted when I give you the money and you throw it at me, and my kids don't understand it. They think I make such a big fuss about it. But I have stopped whole lines of people in stores telling the cashier, you have to give me that money back in my hand.
Pick it up, Bob.
Pick it up.
My mom is the same way.
Yeah, it drives. But it's a Grenada thing. Oh, it's probably a Caribbean thing.
And you know
what?
My mother's, our family had a shop.
That's what it is.
Zanan's on Melville Street.
But that, oh my gosh, that was your shop.
Yeah.
I know that shop. I used to go in that shop when I was a kid. Oh. That's Grenada for you. It's such a small place. Listen, I went home a year ago, went to the market to get some cashews, you know, the burnt cashews.
Of course.
And the lady said, wait, are you Mr. Vivi Grandchild?
Yeah.
I said, I am. She said, well, I mean, you're a grown woman now, but Lord, you were the little girl that used to come here. I said, I am. I said, but you still
but
here?
But you're still here.
Still here.
People don't die in Grenada.
No, they don't.
I don't know if it's the Jacks.
The breadfruit, the jacks, the mango.
I don't know.
The Julie Mango.
The Julie Mango.
The saltwater bath, better known as the sea.
The sea. Just go and take a dip in the sea. I know that this is a growing up West Indian episode, but this has become a growing up Grenada episode. You know, I mean, but but it speaks to the depth of the cultures of even the specific islands, because I think a lot of times it gets washed up as like, oh, it's just the Caribbean, and each island has its own uniqueness. And then you have Jamaicans who a lot of times like to act like there are no other islands.
Yes.
And there very much is. And
Jamaicans are very proud.
Very proud. But Grenadians are very proud. We are a small island with big talent.
We're loud. Grenada had to be loud because all the bigger islands were getting all the attention. And I actually
we were like, let's have a revolution.
Let's have a revolution. And let's change our flag.
Yes.
Because I think when we put the colors, when we added, I think we added red. I think the colors of the flag before was green, yellow, and I can't remember. It was another sort of beigey brown color. Before independence.
I never knew that.
Yes, this is a flag that started in 1973. Yeah, this was the new flag.
Well, all you got a real dose of Grenada. You got a large dose on small doses of Grenada.
Yep.
Thank you so much. And also,
thank you
for putting the nutmeg on your stationery.
It's all about it.
And for, you know, keeping Grenada culture and West Indian culture in the mix. You are absolutely not somebody who has like hidden your accent hidden your Grenada. You know, you see this all the time where people want to immerse themselves and then they don't want to like let people know where they're
from.
But
why not be that person in the room? Why not be that person in the room that says, you need to learn about me?
Yes.
You need to learn about where I'm from. I always tell my friends, and I've taken a lot of my friends to Grenada, I said, you really don't know me until you walk in the mud that I walked in, until you come under that nutmeg tree I grew up under. You don't know me. It's a whole other thing. Grenada is my therapy.
Absolutely. I tell people this. When you land and you come off the plane and you could like, it's like you could smell the spice.
Spice is so good. It's so good. I always bring it back in my suitcase. Every time. They can't smell it.
Every time.
I mean, immigration's like, what you got in there? I said spice.
Spice.
I know you could smell it.
All the spices.
You can smell the thing. Why are you asking
me? Mace, clove, nutmeg. Come on.
That's
saffron.
Right. That's right.
Well, thank you for hanging out with us.
This was so good. This was
and
so
I'm
good.
And I'm so glad we got to connect.
Yes.
You
yes.
know?
And now you can't get rid of me, Amanda. My whole family stalks your Instagram. We love you.
Yes.
We just love you. My sister would call, Amanda just put up a story. Amanda just put up a story. Check it out. Check it out. Amanda's story up.
And then when I go to Greens, I just story,
exactly.
story. You know, I try
exactly.
and really show people.
Yes.
Listen, I should be an honorary diplomat or ambassador
you
for
should.
Grenada.
You absolutely should.
Charlamagne bring his whole family down
you
this Christmas
should.
Just because of my Instagram.
No, I'm telling you, you should.
So eventually, it's going to happen, you know? It's going to happen.
Thank you so much. This
thank
so
you.
Much
I will be right back with our last dose. And thank you again to Yvette. Coming true. Greens Ding Day.
Yeah.
The last dose.
So growing up in Grenada, what you learn are the names that mean Grenada,
yes,
that mean something. The contributions the families make to Grenada. It's usually because they provide amazing goods to people, or they're a great doctor family, yeah, or a great
educators.
So SEALs always meant brilliant people.
Seriously.
And you can go to their amazing store and get everything you want. You know, and that's kind of how it is. There was like the Radics that were known,
yes,
for being, you know, and then the educators, T.A. Marichaux,
yes,
the Marichaux's.
And,
but SEALs were right up there. And it's funny because when people say to me, you're a Noel, do you know all the Noels? And the actress that's in Black Panther, someone sent me a note. Is that your cousin? I said, she's my cousin today.
Yes.
She's my cousin today. Because family names mean so much in Grenada.
In Grenada, when you meet another Grenadian, the first thing you ask is, what is your last name?
What's your last name?
First thing.
Yeah.
I have a friend who we were walking into an event, and I was on the phone, and the person was like, oh, are you the girl in the purple shirt? And I said, no, I'm next to her. And I said, and we were going to this like fake beach that they had made in
yeah,
Queens.
Yeah, yeah,
and they, right, that whole sentence. And they were like, well, are you ready for the beach? And I was like, this ain't no damn beach. I'm from Grenada. And the girl in the purple shirt was like, you're from Grenada? And then we looked at each other, and we both had the Grenada pendant.
Oh,
and it was my friend Elgin Wadali. And Wadali is another Grenada
name. That's a name. Wadali.
You know? So, but the first thing we ask is, what's your last name? And then we call our parents.
Every single person I meet from Grenada, I ask them what's their last
name. That's the rule.
And then, what parish?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm from St. Andrews.
St. Andrews.
So, oh, Greens.
Thanks for this.
It's a good show.